Okay, we are continuing after the pleasant lunch at the faculty club here at the University of Toronto. Thanks to Professor Harrison, that was very nice. Just before we started the session, you mentioned ASMS and membership or working on the board. You served a tour on the board of ASMS, if I'm not mistaken.
That's correct, yes.
Okay, how did that, what was exciting about that?
It was interesting to be involved with the company, with the organization. It was much smaller, of course, then.
This would have been
76 to 79.
Okay.
I was on sabbatical with Keith Jennings in Warwick in the first half of 75.
Uh-huh.
And I got a call. People tracked me down.
Oh, wow.
I think it was Fred McLafferty.
Oh, okay.
And said, would you let your name stand for board of directors of ASMS? I said, why not?
Mm-hmm.
So I ended up being the editor. And at that time, of course, there was a bound volume produced of short abstracts or the extended abstracts.
Mm-hmm.
And that was my job to get that produced and mail it out.
Mm-hmm.
It took a lot of time in the summer and fall.
Yeah, that's almost as bad as writing a book.
What?
Almost as bad as writing a book.
About as time-consuming, yes.
Yeah, definitely.
But I had a very good secretary part-time who handled a lot of the gut work.
So this was at a period, well, eventually they hired out the work to Judith Watson and Schoberg. Was she on board at that time? Was
who?
Judith Watson?
I don't think so.
Yeah, if you were having your secretary do things,
yeah,
that was part of my understanding of why ASMS wanted to hire someone to do the job full time, because they were
it was growing
so much, and it was relying so much on.
So the first two years, I was responsible for assembling it and mailing it out.
Mm-hmm.
So we took over a lab here on a weekend and brought in all my friends and my daughters and their friends, and we packaged these things up and mailed them out.
Oh boy.
And the third year I assembled them, there was somebody in Pittsburgh, I think, who had some way of sorting them out and mailing them, so they got shipped down there.
Well, and if you mailed them from here, wasn't that an issue with, you had to pay Canadian postage to...
Yeah, that's right, yes.
So that was...
Overseas postage.
Overseas.
Well, not overseas, but it's more expensive to send things to the United States, yes.
Yeah.
But they didn't complain.
So at that time, the board also, were they vetting the papers that were submitted for presentation at the conference? Our abstracts had to be submitted.
Yes.
But at one time, they just pretty much accepted everything that came in, but eventually they started, looking at...
Yes, I've been on abstract review committee.
Okay, but they weren't doing that during your tenure?
I don't think they were, no. Okay. I think everything was accepted, which was not necessarily a good thing.
Yeah. Well, and I think they wanted to also try and keep it as much on the science side as possible, and people would come in with papers that were from the vendors that were more like sales pitches.
I think
they were trying to control that. And I'm sure the property, the papers were of good quality as best as they could. But then that is a lot of work to review those papers.
Yes.
And decide, which ones... First off, whether to accept it and in which session to put it.
Yes, I don't envy the people who have this job now.
Yeah.
It's got so big.
Yeah, they were looking at, 3,000 submissions, I think, at a minimum, or close to that for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that was an interesting experience for you to be involved in the management of.
It was
ASMS by that time.
Oh, yes, yes.
Yeah, ASCAM was no longer in the picture. What was your feeling when, I think it was Graham Cooks was one of the instrumental persons in getting ASMS to evolve out of ASTM. At that time, did you have any feelings?
I wasn't involved with it particularly at that time, but I think it turned out to be a very good idea. I'm happy with it.
Well, ASTM E14 didn't really, I think, represent the subject well, because it didn't seem, well, I mean, they weren't in the business of developing testing methods anymore, really.
No.
I mean, that's what ASTM is for, is to develop testing methods, which was what was interesting or important to the petroleum chemistry community.
Yes.
So the petroleum chemistry community was just a small fraction.
ASTM, the Committee E14, couldn't cover effectively the whole range of activities that developed in mass spectrometry through the 60s and 70s particularly.
Well, in addition, this is a time when the academic side of the field was kind of outweighed or overtook the applied or industrial side
yes,
of the field.
Yes.
I mean, I think it's probably not well appreciated that mass spec got its start in an industry.
It's got started in the oil industry in the Second World War.
Right.
And the gasoline, tested gasolines and oils.
It took a while for that to evolve into an academic area. And I think the ASMS represents that
evolution.
Yeah, much better. We were talking before lunch about fun papers that you were involved in. Did you recall any other? We talked about two or three of them, and I don't know if there were some others that you had in mind that I can bring up.
No, I can't think of any other particular papers.
Okay. Did you? I guess there's a sense of accomplishment to see that other people are citing your work.
Yes.
In large quantity. I always think it's interesting when older papers are cited, because I think the technology for keeping tabs has become much better recently.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess the citation index has been around for some time.
Web of Science.
Okay.
Yes. That is what I use.
Okay. And that's pretty accurate, you think, in terms of keeping tabs on what's...
I think it misses out some of the early papers that one might have published, but...
I think they all do.
Yes.
Because the early papers are so hard to... a lot of them are, I think, made available in PDF format, but still you've got to have the software to search through all these...
Yes.
And find the references in the work.
Well, I'm involved now. 2013 is the 100th anniversary of the beginning of mass spectrometry.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The first paper of J.J. Thompson was 1913.
Yeah, that was the year he published also the rays of positive electricity.
Yes, yes.
I've been active in promoting that this last year. So we had a session. I was able to get the ASMS program chair to give us one oral session for the history of mass spec in the meeting in Minneapolis, so that was a bit of a challenge because there's so much going on.
Yes.
But I was gratified to see it was Thursday afternoon competing against all the other normal sessions that are running simultaneously. And we had, I would say, at least 300 plus people
really good
attend our history session at the last day of the conference and the last sessions of the conference. So that was well received. And then there was also... we had a session at the American Chemical Society conference in Indianapolis on the history of mass spec symposium. We had actually Ken Standing came from Canada and gave a talk on time of flight mass spec. So we've been promoting the idea that this is a really 100th anniversary of mass spectrometry.
Well, the International Journal of Mass Spectrometry has decided to publish one or more issues on the developments in mass spectrometry.
Excellent.
And I've been asked to write a retrospective paper on the early days of ion molecule reactions, kinetics.
Uh-huh.
So I know what you mean by trying to find some of these old papers.
Yes. They can be had, but it's
it takes a lot of searching.
It can be a challenge.
Yeah.
Well, one of the interesting things, if looking at J.J. Thompson's earlier publications, he actually, I think, was doing a little bit of, unknowingly, was doing a little bit of either ion molecule or CI, because he had this H3, or this H3. Ion with mass 3, they didn't know
yes.
where it was coming from.
Yes,
and so,
yes, that was the early work.
Yeah.
There were several people who got involved in that and showed that it really was H3 plus. And
yeah. Yeah.
Yes, I found those papers.
Uh-huh.
They took some doing to track them down.
Okay.
But what I'm having trouble with is the early work of Victor Talroza in Russia.
Yeah.
I'm sure some of it has been translated into English versions of the journals, but
I
have to go and tackle our librarian and get this sorted out.
That's going to be challenging there. But it's very important. That was one of the facets of the ASMS session we had at the ASMS meeting, was to get the international feel. So we had a woman from Russia, we had Simone Koenig from Germany, we had Yoshi Yawakawa from Japan, and Bob Boyd.
Mm-hmm.
So we had
an international
representation of the developments in mass spectrometry in the United States, but outside of the United States as well, because
mm-hmm.
there's so much out there. And so I think that was a kind of very revelatory, particularly to the younger people in the crowd, that,
yes.
know, that there's this huge contribution to the field from all over the world. And it was interesting to have these people from different parts of the world give talk at the conference. Maybe why we got such a strong attendance, I don't know, but it was very well received, and I think a lot of people enjoyed finding out a little bit about the history of the field, and it's what keeps me interested in
mm-hmm.
exploring and talking to people like yourself who've been there and done a lot. So right now, it seems to me that the Canadian emphasis, I mean, take Kibarley and you, and Standing, it seems those are all kind of looking at fundamental aspects of the field, as opposed to something very applied or whatnot. Does that seem to be a...
That would be an honest assessment,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah, so
and I would include John Holmes in Ottawa
that
group as well.
So I wonder if that represents the funding priorities that came from the agency, from ICNRC as the primary funding organization.
Most of the ones that you've mentioned are either retired or close to retirement.
Mm-hmm.
I think there are a number of younger ones, people who are doing more, particularly in proteomics.
Mm-hmm.
Quite a number of young people spread across the country who are doing more applied work.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's getting to be the case now, with the proteomics is becoming...
It's
a big emphasis.
Become a big emphasis,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And metabolomics and
that too.
Glycomics, all the
yes,
omics.
Yes, all the omics.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy, all this omics stuff. So it looks like you've had a very successful career in networking with your peers inside and outside of the University of Toronto, and you go on to been invited to go abroad to spend 6 months at a time doing mm-hmm. research in
mm-hmm.
France and Switzerland, and that seems like a nice duty.
It was very satisfying, very interesting. One of the first I had was in 1974.
Mm-hmm.
I was invited by the Hungarian Academy of Science to spend a week in Budapest.
Oh, wow.
And so we went to Budapest. Barbara only stayed 3 or 4 days.
Mm-hmm.
She had to get to pick up our daughters and get them back in time for school.
Oh, okay.
But I was there for a week, and that was very very interesting. I visited all the labs that had mass spectrometers, and
uh-huh.
finally, at the end of the, on the last Friday, they had a one-day symposium on modern trends in chemistry,
okay.
which I gave a talk at.
This is
1974.
Okay.
It was certainly, well, still in the communist regime.
Yeah. So how were there any issues with you getting in and out of the country? Or?
No.
Okay.
We had No trouble at that time. We arrived on a Friday evening. Mm-hmm. We were given a supply of Hungarian money, and told there was the academy that had a guest house at that time.
Okay.
So we were put up at the guest house. We were provided with money and said a car will pick you up on Monday morning.
Uh-huh.
So we had Saturday and Sunday to roam around.
Oh,
we may have been followed. I don't know, but I didn't notice it.
Yeah, so apparently that was something that did happen from time to time. That
yes.
Would be followed around if they.
It may well have been. I don't know. I didn't bother.
But in terms of interaction with the scientific community there,
that was interesting.
That was
yes.
But wide open, there wasn't any.
No.
Any attempt to
no.
try and no. Curtail or who you saw or.
No.
Or that kind of thing.
No. The Danube River comes down through Budapest,
uh-huh.
and there's a big bend.
Mm-hmm.
So on the Tuesday, the lab that I was mainly visiting declared a holiday, and in a collection of cars, we drove up the Danube, seeing sights and so forth,
mm-hmm.
and came back the straight path down through the hills.
Oh boy.
And that's where you saw the Russian army.
Okay.
Up in the hills above Budapest.
Okay.
I think it was Russian army.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So when Hungary actually was freed from the Russian occupation?
I'm not exactly sure.
Yeah.
Oh.
Was it Kabarly that escaped from Hungary before?
No, he was Romania, I think,
okay.
or one of the other countries.
Okay.
Bulgaria. He was Bulgaria.
Okay. And he just managed to get out.
I think so.
Yeah. It's interesting how people wanted to get away from from whenever the Russians started to move in, they wanted to move out. So right now, you still are publishing, you're probably about, your current work interests are probably pretty much done, I think, at this point, right? I mean, in terms of what you're doing science, this kind of science you're doing.
Yes.
So, and that's all been in mostly in the protein end of things.
In the last 20 years, yes.
Yeah. And you're doing this work with fourth-year students?
I'm doing it largely by myself now.
Okay. All right. And so that's just a matter of when you feel like...
But, I have some collaborations. I've had quite a bit of collaboration with Bella Pies.
Uh-huh.
That has now sort of ended.
Mm-hmm.
He's got too involved in being a professor,
mm-hmm.
so he's not doing much research.
That happens.
What's taken over is probably Ben Beithel, who's at Missouri University, St. Louis,
uh-huh.
who was a postdoc with Pies.
Mm-hmm. I think he may have been given a, there's a local mass spec discussion group in St. Louis that
mm-hmm.
I was involved in starting many, many, many years ago.
And, yes, we've all been there.
Yeah, and my recollection is I just got a notice, an email notice not too long ago that they were inviting in someone who had just taken a position at University of Missouri. In St. Louis. So
that probably is Ben Beithel.
Yeah, it must be.
He's quite a good, mostly theoretician, but also experimentalist.
Okay, very good.
So he's tackling some theoretical aspects of a problem I have.
Ah, okay.
I have the results, and he's trying to interpret them in terms of structures and energies of ions.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But one of the papers that you mentioned that I published this year was in collaboration with my former postdoc, Yalcin, who's a
uh-huh.
professor in Turkey.
Okay.
And we've kept in touch.
So how does that work? He was from Turkey?
He was from Turkey. And applied for a postdoc position with me.
Uh-huh.
He seemed good. Turned out to be good. He bounced around with several other groups in North America.
Mm-hmm.
Tried to get an academic position in North America,
uh-huh.
but eventually went back to Turkey and is doing quite well. I think he has the mass spectrometry lab in Turkey.
Does he have a Maldives? equipment, do you know? Or?
He certainly has electric spray. I'm not sure about Baldy. I think he may have.
That's interesting. Okay. But you're still in connected with him and cooperating
yes.
on things.
Yes, we correspond on a fairly regular basis.
I guess Turkey is the most western of the eastern countries.
Yes. Yeltsin seems to have a lot of money because
huh?
he attends most of the SMS meetings and brings two or three students with him.
Ah.
And that's not cheap coming mm-hmm. from Istanbul or near there.
Yeah. That's interesting. My son visited somebody, Mass Spec Lab in Turkey, so I'll have to find out if there's a connection that way.
Mm-hmm.
It would be kind of interesting if there was a connection that way. All right. I don't know if you have any other topics that we haven't discussed that maybe you want to talk about. We've kind of covered. I think your most significant publication and the most fun publications.
No, I don't have.
So, what do you think your the impact of your work is on the field of ion molecule reactions?
I don't think we should neglect the aspect of training.
Okay.
Several of my students have, graduate students or postdocs or visitings, have done quite well in the academic world. One of my students who graduated in 86 went straight to the Interior Ministry of the Environment and is now one of the world's experts on dioxin and other chlorinated compounds,
mm-hmm.
mass spectrometry thereof.
And his name would be?
His name is Reiner, R-E-I-N-E-R, Eric.
And he's kind of in a high-level position in the Interior Ministry here.
Interior Ministry of the Environment, yes. But he's done very well, but he did his graduate work with me.
Mm-hmm.
Another one who was about the same time is now running one of the proteomics labs at one of the universities in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
So there was more than just the impact of the results,
mm-hmm.
but the training of the students, and I don't want that to be downplayed.
Okay.
I looked at this as a joint effort where we were solving problems, and they were learning, and I was learning.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so, as important as the body of work
was the training.
Is the people who have benefited from
yes.
their association with you.
Yes, you didn't meet Michelle in the mass spec lab,
mm-hmm.
but you saw probably the young woman running around.
Mm-hmm.
She did a master's degree with me.
Mm-hmm.
She went to work for Eli Lilly, who had a research and development lab in
mm-hmm.
Toronto.
Okay.
They closed that a number of years ago, so we brought her back to work here.
Okay.
And I think I'm not quite sure, but I think maybe the triple quadrupole instrument that's there came from Eli Lilly.
Oh, okay.
They were going to throw out all their mass spectrometers
oh, wow.
because there might be secrets or nasty things or so forth.
Oh, yeah.
I heard about this through Michelle and another student who'd worked there.
Mm-hmm.
Got the chairman to intervene. And
yeah.
I think we ended up with two or three triple quads.
Yeah.
One of which came here, one or two went to the suburban campuses.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think we got everything except the hard drive.
Oh, okay. Yeah, well, that's...
yeah, you can see the reason.
yeah, I can understand why they wouldn't want to give you the hard drive.
No. But, a couple of my students have, I mentioned earlier, Tsang, T-S-A-N-G,
mm-hmm.
who had a good career at Hong Kong Polytechnic University.
Mm-hmm.
He now lives in Vancouver. Another one, Hei-Wen Leong, was a research associate with me for some time in the 70s. He ended up at the Hong Kong Baptist University.
Hmm. So it sounds like you've got a fair number of students from abroad.
Oh, yes.
Primarily Chinese, Indian?
I had an Indian postdoc at one stage, early in the career. Postdocs and a number from the UK, mm-hmm. Netherlands. Israel.
Okay.
United States, China, Japan.
Pretty much broad spectrum.
Yes. I'm still getting letters or emails from Chinese.
Oh, really?
Students particularly. Applying for a postdoctoral position.
Oh, my.
No way, Jose.
Thanks, but no thanks.
Right.
What do you think is kind of a broad spectrum question. What do you think is the importance of the vitality of chemical research and development chemistry for the country, for progress, it's really kind of a broad, wide open question. Do you have any feeling one way or the other?
Well, obviously there's a lot of work going on in proteomics, cancer, searching for a cure for cancer, various types. There's also a bunch of other stuff going on, microfluidics and things like that. One of my colleagues and his associate just won some award for developing a anti-fouling compound to apply to boats and fishing nets and so forth, which is doesn't have the heavy metals that that are a bit of a hazard to the fish in the ocean. So there's a lot of surface chemistry going on and nanochemistry, a big field.
We have
quite a bit of that going on here.
Okay, and that's you think that's probably where we're going to be heading with chemical research and development?
I'm afraid it's going to be too much development and not enough research. That's the way the present government wants to run.
The funding picture.
Picture is to...
I read an article in CNN News this last week or two about the government here is kind of leaning on people who are doing work in the environmental chemistry area. Are you aware of this?
They're
kind of trying to keep them from...
There are several things happening in Canada at the moment. One is that scientists who work for the government are pretty well muzzled.
Mm-hmm.
They can't speak clearly about what they are doing or what they want, what the results they're getting.
Is this irrespective of the field that they're in?
Pretty well, yes.
Because the impression I got from this article is primarily or certainly focused on people working in environmental...
Well, that is the field that they're really clamping down on. Canada is not a good neighbor in terms of environmental record. We haven't had any effective measures to control CO2 levels.
Oh, really?
We have a burgeoning oil industry in Alberta, which is very dirty oil. It's more almost asphalt. It's very energy consuming to get it out. It creates a lot of CO2 emissions. But the government seems to have taken this as the economic future, is to produce oil.
Mm-hmm.
There's many arguments over building a pipeline from Alberta down to Texas, which is waiting for Obama's approval.
That's the Keystone pipeline?
Yeah, that's the Keystone.
Yeah.
And so they don't like to be criticized in terms of their environmental records. And so anybody at least who's in the under control of the government is pretty well muzzled.
I see.
Now, another thing, there was a experimental lakes area in northern Ontario.
Oh, yes.
Which was a gem in terms of being have a whole lake that you could carry out experiments on. Mm-hmm. This was funded in part by the federal government.
Mm-hmm.
They've closed it down.
Mm.
But it was... excuse me. It played an important role in looking at acid rain and things like that.
Oh, really? Okay. The problem with these activities is you don't... There's an investment that's being thrown away, and you don't go back and decide you want to start it up again and get back to where you were.
It's difficult.
Yeah. Bless you.
Mm.
But I don't think, unfortunately, our non-scientific friends don't seem to can't comprehend the idea that you just don't turn a switch and things, mm-hmm. you know, go back to where they were before you clobbered them. I've noticed in the United States, at least over my career, I worked in industry most of my career, that the sympathy or the support of science in the industry has become considerably less and less with time. I don't know if you have a feel for what's going on in Canada and industrial laboratories, how that's playing out. Or
there is a significant problem that Canadian industry doesn't do a lot of research.
Ah, okay.
Especially if they're a subsidiary of an American company. I mentioned Eli Lilly.
Uh-huh, yeah.
They had a research and development labs here in Toronto for quite a long time. They closed them down.
Hmm.
Moved their stuff all down back to the States. I forget where Eli Lilly is headquartered.
Somewhere in Ohio, I think. Cincinnati, Indianapolis, or whatever.
Somewhere in there. Indianapolis, I think, maybe.
Yeah.
So that's part of the problem. But I think, in general, Canadians tend to be too complacent.
Oh, really?
This business is working fine now. Why should we try to mm-hmm. upgrade it and update it and mm-hmm. do research?
Mm-hmm.
We're making enough money now. What mm-hmm. the hell?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I mean, there's all kinds of attitudes and approaches, and mm-hmm. that's one.
Now we have a problem at the moment with BlackBerry.
Ah, yes.
Which has been a big company for much of the time up in Waterloo.
Mm-hmm.
But they, I think, didn't keep up with the times.
Yeah.
Didn't put enough money into their research and development. We're selling fellow phones. Why should we continue to do research?
Yeah.
The Apple overtook them.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's an area that's almost as bad as Mass Spec in terms of the technological developments. Because, I mean, Mass Spec is an area that is hard to keep up with in terms of the technology. It's just crazy in my mind. You know, every time you go to the SMS meeting, you go to the Pittsburgh conference, and you just have a tremendous amount of new developments. And
mm-hmm.
It's really an amazing, to me, it's very amazing. J.J. Thompson would be proud.
Well, I recall when I first started going to these meetings in 59 and on, there was a lot of talk on developing time-of-flight instruments
mm-hmm.
Because they were going to be simpler to put up with the rockets
mm-hmm.
in the space.
Mm-hmm.
But they were low-resolution, low-mass-range machines at that time.
Yeah.
Look where they've come to now.
Yeah.
Major development.
Yes, it's all the old sector machines that held sway have kind of been put out to pasture.
I don't think they must sell many sector instruments now.
That would be an interesting thing to find out.
Yes.
I have no idea.
No, I don't either.
I'm sure you're right. That whole thing has changed. Okay, well, unless you have any other comments that you want to make, then I think maybe we've got the audio portion of the interview pretty much done. I'm not sure if you want to sit for a video recording or not. That's up to you.
I'd just soon not.
Okay. Well, then, if you're not, let me. Can I just then discuss or talk about the more philosophical topics that are in that in the video interview? One of which relates to mentoring and being mentored. You had a number of mentors in your career as you were growing up and coming into chemistry and developing your own career. So what was it that these mentors did that worked, that helped you, or maybe inspired you or motivated you? Do you remember?
Well, I think I was lucky in my MSc and PhD work to have mentors, my supervisors, who gave me quite a bit of freedom to do my thing, mm-hmm. and encouraged me, and that gave me more enthusiasm to see that they appreciated, they encouraged me to carry on, and I made mistakes, and they pointed them out to me nicely.
Uh-huh.
And Fred Lossing in NRC in Ottawa too was a great person who I enjoyed working there, not only for the chemistry but for the interaction with a very intelligent man.
Mm-hmm.
So all of those three helped a lot. When I came here, G.J. Leroy had taken over in 1960, take over as head of the department. He was very encouraging.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I didn't take his advice. I remember one day him telling me, you know, you really should wear a tie when you're lecturing. I didn't take that advice. But I've met a lot of encouraging people. The greatest encouraging person has been my wife.
Oh, okay. She encouraged you not to write another book.
She helped me write the second one.
Oh, really?
But, no, she's been a wonderful companion.
So, you now have done a lot of mentoring of others.
Yes.
So, what is it that worked best with these people coming up, and how did you connect with them and get them to kind of follow your advice and
there is not a standard method, I don't think. Each student is different,
mm-hmm.
and you have to adjust your mentoring to that student. Some of them want to be left alone and give them the grand outline,
mm.
and they want to get ahead with it.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them will want to be have discussions frequently.
Mm-hmm.
And I tried to recognize these differences. But I also wanted to make it clear to them that we were working on this together.
Mm.
It wasn't me way up there,
mm-hmm.
telling you, go and do this.
Mm-hmm.
We jointly had a problem to solve.
Okay.
And I think that was very important too.
A collaborative,
yes,
effort.
Try to make it as a collaboration if we can. And as a result, several of those students I still am in contact with.
Mm-hmm.
We became friends.
Sure.
I mentioned this trapping of ions in an electron beam.
Mm-hmm.
The person that did that, Alan Harrod, was English.
Mm-hmm.
We've kept in touch. He came back this past summer and stayed 3 days with us. We got an email this morning. Our younger daughter is in England, granddaughter
mm-hmm.
is in England at the moment. She's finished high school. She's taking a year off to explore.
Mm-hmm.
She's working in a town called Broadway in England.
Okay.
She had the day off, either yesterday or the day before, and Alan Harrod and his wife picked up Catherine and took her around exploring the countryside.
Oh, nice.
This is an association dating back to the 60s.
Mm-hmm. Nice. So if you saw someone, a young person today, who hadn't gotten involved in science yet, but seemed to show that they had an interest or aptitude for it, how would you advise them to go forward if to encourage them to pursue a scientific career?
How would I? I would encourage them to really think about what would make them happy and satisfied, not to become a inorganic chemist because that's trendy, but are you going to be happy there? Mm-hmm. Or maybe even to become a physicist instead of a chemist, whatever's going to make you happy, I think. Okay. That's the main thing.
Try and own the process and not be driven by someone else's
idea. That's right,
yes. What you should be. In your career in science, there's been a fairly large number or increase in the number of women who have come to pursue science.
Mm-hmm.
How do you see this development?
I think it's a very good one. I find here it's particularly in environmental mm-hmm. chemistry. I think they're more socially conscious.
Hmm. You think perhaps they may be better suited for some kinds of investigations than men may be?
I think their interests probably are slightly different.
Mm-hmm.
As I say, I think they're more socially concerned.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, obviously, science is a field that has a lot of competition. And for funds and competition to get be the first person to publish.
Mm-hmm.
Have you been involved in any of that type of competition? And what do you think about the whole idea of competition in science? Is it?
I suppose I've been involved in. By attending meetings, I've been pretty well aware of what is going on in the field.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think mass spectrometry is as cutthroat in that respect
really?
As some areas of science. And I've found, for the most part, that the people I met and the people I know are always very helpful, encouraging. So I haven't felt competition was a major problem.
You sense that it is more competitive in other fields of science, but you feel that mass spec is more of a collegial.
I think in the very development of medications or new drugs,
mm-hmm.
there may be more cutthroat. There's more money involved in the long run. And one wonders if the biological mass spectrometers may be a bit more cutthroat than the old-fashioned ones, which I am one.
Yes, me too. What do you have any comments to make about the changes you've seen in the field of mass spectrometry over your career? It's gone from a kind of a niche technique to...
One never would have dreamt, say in the 50s,
mm-hmm.
that you'd be doing peptides and proteins. It's just changed the whole field.
Mm-hmm.
It's changed ASMS. But the developments have been major, major, major. And the instrumentation to take these new techniques along
uh-huh.
have been major as well.
Yeah.
So it's nothing like I saw it in 1950s.
But you're able to appreciate where it is today.
Oh, yes.
Yes. So where do you think it's going to head from here?
I couldn't predict.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's still lots of developments that can take place in proteomics, lipidomics, a lot of these areas.
Mm-hmm.
I think the DART ionization, as Matt was saying, is a good step forward, which one might not have thought of originally.
Mm-hmm.
But it's why you turn people loose, is they're going to come up with some new ideas.
Yeah, that's a crazy ionization technique. It's just, like you say, I mean, I Start out using a 110 to analyze gas samples. You know, but, now it's like you couldn't. It's hard to comprehend what's going on with the field anymore. And I don't think it's good to try and predict, really, because it's so unpredictable.
Yes.
But I think the only thing you can say, I think there were people at different times, point in time, who thought that the field had hit the wall, you know, that it, that there wasn't...
There's nothing more to be developed.
Right.
Yes.
And I think that if you have that position, I think you're in trouble, because every time that people said it hit the wall, then somebody would come along and blow the wall away and off you are to hold the field. So
yes,
it's definitely got a future. I'm sure of that. Whatever it is, I don't think any of us can predict, but it's not gonna
be stagnant.
And that's for sure. There's too many people doing too many good things and having a lot of fun doing it.
Mm-hmm.
That's what counts. Having fun. Well, unless you have any other comments or thoughts that you want to preserve for posterity, so to speak, we can probably wrap things up.
I don't think I do. No.
Very good. I'll push the...